Hello, I'm Steve Davis. Welcome to this podcast for Australia's National Centre for Vocational Education Research. This podcast looks at initial findings from research that is underway on the use of migrant women's skills in regional areas and the potential role of education and training to help connect these women to work and community or social activities. Sue Webb from Monash University's Faculty of Education is one of the lead researchers. And perhaps, Sue, we'll start by asking, how far are you into the research?
Well, we're about two-thirds of the way through our data collection. We're going into the field in part of regional Victoria, where we're collecting data from a range of organisations and from individual migrant women and men. And at this stage, we've collected about two-thirds of that data, and we hope to be in a position by October to be able to report back to people in the region and hold a workshop with people there to present some initial findings and take people's reactions to those and be able to use those in the final construction of our report for NCVER.
Now, the full title of the study is Skilled Migrant Women in Regional Australia, the Role of Vocational Education and Training in Promoting Social Inclusion. And before I try and tease out some initial thoughts on your findings thus far, perhaps we could quickly set the global context within which the study is taking place. And, for example, you note the growth of a global knowledge economy that's enticing large numbers of skilled migrants from emerging regions like India and China and Southeast Asia to emigrate to developed countries like the US, Canada, EU, etc. They're seeking better career and lifestyle outcomes. Has Australia been doing anything to tap into this pool of skilled migrants?
Yes, Australia's been doing a terrific amount. And in fact, you can probably tell by my accent that I've got an English accent, and I myself have come into Australia within the last 2 years on part of that, drive to look beyond Australia for fulfilling particular roles. The sorts of things that we've been focusing on are the policies particularly aimed at trying to attract skilled migrants, particularly into regional areas. The reason for this is that the Australian government has been focusing very much on the growth and the patchwork economy issues in different parts of Australia by trying to focus on the development of regions. And it's well recognised from a wider international literature that increasing populations can help to stimulate economies. At the present, we've little knowledge of what actually happens to people in those regional areas and to what extent they're likely to stay in those areas and continue to the development of those areas. So one of the interests in this is to try and look at the issues of what kinds of work people are able to take up, the kinds of ways in which people have come in, the types of visa categories, with some people coming in with a job to go to and others coming in just because they've met the criteria for having the appropriate skills that Australia is looking for, and trying to look at the ways in which particular providers within the regions are able to support and encourage progression into employment so that people feel fully settled in those regions. But the specific issue around social inclusion is to try and think about, well, what kind of settlement is going on? What kind of employment are people experiencing? Because one of the other things that there is in quite a lot of the literature about migration is some evidence, and this is not just in Australia, but there is evidence in Australia, that for those migrants who are in some sense clearly racially or visually marked migrants, that they seem to be in very different from the population that has been settled in areas for a long time, that those migrants find it more difficult to enter into the areas of the labour market that they were in before.
Sue, the particular focus you have is on skilled migrant women in regional Australia. Do we have many of them?
Well, yes, we do. As I say, the numbers for migration to regional areas have been increasing, and very often these people who are coming in as skilled migrants don't come in as single people, and we're very aware from data on migration that quite often the prime applicant in migration is male and that they bring in a female partner. These female partners are often just as well qualified as their husbands, but one of the issues is sort of whether or not these women are able to get into the labour force at the levels that they perhaps were at before.
And there's also an interesting irony on Australian attitudes towards skilled migrants. You were referring to a recent Scanlon Foundation report on social cohesion, and it seems that we might consider migrants by visa category first, and Australians have positive attitudes to those who are admitted to Australia on the basis of skill. But in those regions outside of the metropolitan areas, where delivery of critical things like medical services, rely on highly skilled migrants, we find Australians there have the lowest appreciation of the value of immigration. Surely we have a vested interest in trying to get that right.
Certainly, and in the region that we're focusing on for the case study, we've been told by the health provider that we've spoken with that they are extremely reliant on skilled migration, to the point of approximately 40% of their workforce. I'm giving you that figure, but at this stage things are still fairly tentative, and that's just something that was given to me through an interview. That just suggests that this is a really important way of sustaining a regional community, when regional communities are often losing many of their younger people to cities or to work in other parts of regional Australia, where there's a boom through of the mining activities and so on. Skilled migrants are coming in behind, and they're finding themselves working particularly in the health system, but also coming in and developing other sort of networks and support services and businesses, which is actually making areas quite vibrant again.
Now, looking at the vet sector in particular here and the roles that it can play, at this early stage in your research, what sort of challenges are you seeing facing the vet sector in playing an effective role in facilitating social inclusion among skilled migrant workers in regional Australia?
It's playing a really significant role in relation to support for humanitarian migrants, and that it's very much the first port of call for many humanitarian migrants. In terms of the support for other kind of migrants who are coming in, as I say, with skills but through other sorts of schemes, it's a little bit less clear how the vet sector can work or is working to target those migrants, because they're less easily identified. They're not kind of named as they come into a region. They come in as individuals unless they've been recruited by a particular workplace. Where they've been recruited by a particular workplace, it makes it much easier for that workplace to work with education and training providers to think about things like around induction and support, and think about looking at the skills of perhaps partners or so on. But that's not how a number of migrants come in. So I think the education and training providers find themselves working a little bit in the dark as to how to access these types of migrants and whether or not it's appropriate for them to be deliberately targeting them. But in fact, the work we've done with migrants and with talking with people in different organisations about who the people are on the programmes and what kind of contacts they have with different sorts of people is showing that migrants are coming into contact with education and training. But they're coming into contact with a range of education and training. It's a complex map, and I think for the providers, one of the things that I'm hoping we'll be able to do is help give those providers some sense of what's happening on the ground so that some of the things that people know informally can start to be joined up a little bit more.
And behind this complex web already in dealing with migration and integrating into a community, there's an almost unspoken issue of gender bias in the framing of vet training and delivery thereof. Is that something that you'll be looking into more deeply in the last part of this project?
Very much so. At the moment, we are trying to find out how are people experiencing the migration? What kinds of things do they do? How do they work to try to get back to the, or to try to get to the level of a, of the kind of life they want to have? And we're finding that particularly for women who've come in as partners, so they didn't come in with a job to go to, but those partners who are women are often finding that they're having to give up the kind of professional role that they had in their previous country. But they're finding new ways. But the kind of new ways they're finding do seem to reinforce this notion of a gendered labour markets and gendered educational routes. So there are certain things that it's easier for people to, if you like, transfer or translate the kinds of resources, the kinds of capital that they had in their previous life and work into things here. So we're noticing the way that routes through people's facility with being able to help others learn a language, help others develop their English. So people are often helping others in their community as volunteers and then perhaps as paid English as a second language tutor. And they're finding themselves moving from what might have been professional work in a completely different field, perhaps even a technical field, to working in this sort of field of voluntary work and English language support. And that perhaps what follows from that is maybe a move and a re-qualification into something around maybe community development. Possibly that might ultimately lead to other professional work in that field, certainly if people gain new qualifications in that area. But that's a very, in a sense, gendered way of having to translate and renegotiate a life in a different space. And perhaps working through childcare is another type of trajectory that we're starting to recognise. People re-qualifying in childcare, using their own personal skills and resources. And then because these are very entrepreneurial people, many often then setting up their own childcare businesses on the strength of that. So What we're not seeing is people being easily able to come in and get back to the same level of work unless they're able to have some lucky breaks or support from particular organisations here.
Thanks for listening to this podcast produced by the National Centre for Vocational Education Research. The research we've just been discussing in this podcast is one of three projects currently underway as part of a three-year partnership with NCVER and the Centre for the Economics of Education and Training at Monash University. This partnership aims to improve our understanding of the influence of where we live on social exclusion and the role education and training can play in overcoming possible barriers. If you'd like to know when the report on skilled migrant women has been published, simply subscribe to receive email alerts for NCVER research at www.ncver.edu.au.